folks. Today, a special treat for me, a chat with one of NoFib's first citizen journos. Jan Bowman, a public servant new to Griffith, reported the seats campaign at the 2013 election. 10 years later, she's just retired as editor of her local citizen journalist newspaper, The West Ender. So hello, Jan.
Hi, Margaret. Yeah, lovely to see
this
you.
This is pretty exciting to me, your journey. So I just want to go right back. So I put out the call for people who'd be interested in reporting the seat where they live, town or country, safe or marginal. How did you find the call out, and how did you come to decide to have a go?
Okay. Well, I'd followed you on Twitter for a long time, Margot, and actually followed your career a bit. I used to have a car that didn't have a radio, so at night in the place I lived, I would record Late Night Live with Philip Adams. Many years ago, I'm really talking 30-odd years ago, and I used to put the cassette in my radio in my car in the morning while I drove to work and listen, and that's where I got to know you, followed you on Twitter, and you put the call out on Twitter, and I responded. I'm just a political – I love politics, I guess, and I follow it closely. And I said, oh, you wouldn't want me because the Prime Minister's our local member and he'll have a lot of attention. And you came back and said, absolutely not, I would want you because I want to know what it's like to have the media circus in your electorate from a citizen point of view and or a community-based point of view. And I want to know who the other candidates are, even the minor candidates that don't get attention in elections like that. So that's how it started,
so
really.
So you had just moved to Griffith, I think, about 2 years in, so you were an unknown.
Yep.
So how did you decide to approach it? I know I said, you know, you've got to obey the code of ethics. I want a scene setter and I want it written in the first person. But what was your plan of attack when you decided to do the scene setter when Kevin Rudd was a backbencher?
I really didn't. I don't know that I had a plan. It was pretty random, actually. I just wrote about the West End that I knew and had come to love, I guess. West End in particular, rather than Griffith broadly. And I guess through doing that, I sort of expanded my understanding of the electorate as well. And then I started to approach, as the election sort of got going, the parties to go along to candidates' forums and as press, which I was delighted that they actually let me do. And I was sort of wearing the...
Did you make up a little card?
So, and I think, and I think you actually told me, because I doubted I would get interviews or at least I doubted I would get entree to some of those things. And you said, no, you're local, they will, you know, that's important to them and they'll give you interviews. I guess, well, actually Kevin Rudd never did give me an interview, but I certainly went to forums. So it was just a matter of just being bold, I suppose, and rocking up and standing next to all those seasoned journalists with their big cameras and their big mics and, you know, just braving it out, really.
So I remember your first piece saying, oh, well, this is very boring, he's going to win in a landslide, and then he became Prime Minister again, just on the eve of the election, really.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, the polls started to look very bad for him. So your second report was very different.
Remind me, Margot.
Well, I remember you writing, all of a sudden, the polls have showed he could lose, the Libs have got a great candidate, and everyone is in town. This is now a big story.
And I'm Dr.
Gladstone.
I've forgotten his name. He he certainly had the profile and was, you know, getting the attention. And Rudd was a bit on the nose, I think, then. But, you know, people, a lot of Labor people were disappointed about his behaviour towards Julia Gillard. So, yeah, he was people are fairly unforgiving in Queensland, I think. Voters can be very unforgiving in Queensland. We've seen that happen. We saw it the way Anna Bligh was treated. People turn, and very strongly. So, you know, you can't rely on the fact that you've been around and a member for a long time necessarily.
So Griffith is very lucky, and I've noticed this with the independent seats, that the seats that have got a local community paper are almost definitionally a lot more active and engaged. So when did the West Ender start to run your No Fibs pieces?
Almost immediately, actually. you may not remember Jeff Ebbs, but Jeff Ebbs was involved in editing the West Ender at the time, and he was also running as a Greens candidate against Kevin Rudd. So he wanted to have as much content as he could get, I guess. So he saw what I'd written for No Fibs and asked if he could republish them, and started to do that pretty much straight away. So I guess at that point I started to get more of a people's sort of recognition locally that I was doing this, and you know, perhaps some of the politicians as well was starting to take a little bit more notice anyway. And I was getting out and talking to all of the minor candidates as much as I could. I ran into Bill Glasson at the local market, and his office had just not responded to requests for an interview. And I just went up to him at the market and said, Bill, I can't get, you know, an interview with you. Did you know I'm Jan Bowman from the West Ender? Would you give me No Fibs, would you give me an interview? And he said, he looked at me aghast, and he was standing next to Sally Ann Atkinson, the previous mayor of Brisbane, and she said, of course, Bill, of course you'll give Jan an interview. And so, you know, it's sort of very personal here. You can rub up against people and get to know them, and they love it, I think. People like Sally Ann, certainly, that people are taking an interest, and she was very supportive, and has agreed to interview since. Actually, she's been really available.
One of the things I loved about the 2013 citizen journos is that they actually all wanted to interview the minor candidates, and some of them were fairly spectacular. Did the West Ender like that? Mm. Did they run your pieces on, you know, the Catter Party and the?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Absolutely. They were very happy to do that. And I guess the West Ender has always been inclined to do that. Jeff Ebbs was himself really up against it at that stage. The Greens didn't have anything like the presence they now have locally. I mean, you know, Jeff went from, well, he didn't do that well in that election. He didn't do terribly well in the following by-election. But, of course, now it's Greens, wall-to-wall Greens here now.
Yes, well, when I look back over your coverage over quite a long time, you sort of actually documenting the rise of the Greens, what went wrong after the by-election, which you also covered, which Terry Butler won. But you've actually documented how they've changed tactics and got it right. And I remember towards the end of the last election, you decided to write a piece after quite a while saying, I think the Greens could win Griffith, and I think you were the only person who ever said that, and everyone got the shock of their lives when the Greens rang Griffith. And of course now you're represented by, I would say, the current star of the Greens Party, Max Chandler Mather, who has you know, I think his greatest achievement is to put renters well and truly on the political map. So you've actually documented that over time as a resident.
Yes, it's been quite amazing, really. And I guess we've just had a Brisbane council election. Brisbane City Council is pretty huge, and it's a significant election, really. We thought the Greens would do better. I think the Greens certainly thought they would do better. But really, that rise of the Greens in Brisbane, in Griffith, in South Brisbane has all come through the council, essentially through Jonathan Sri Ranganathan being the first Greens councillor to represent the area, and it grew from there. So we then got a Greens state representative, Amy McMahon, at South Brisbane, and then Max in Griffith. And one of the things that Jonathan Sri Ranganathan said to me is that once you start building a presence, you have that intelligence from the community level, from that you know, grassroots level, that you're feeding up to the candidates. And the Labor representatives were missing out on that intelligence by the time Jonathan was an established councillor. And so he would, and I think the Greens would attribute a lot to his win in the council election for the rise of the Greens, apart from, of course, their focus on a grassroots campaign and taking up the issues of renters and people that are fairly highly represented in this area anyway.
So presumably, as you know, your profile grew with the West End, really, thanks to NoFibs, of course, yes. At some stage, the ABC radio in Brisbane decided to basically do what I'd done on Web Diary, you know, a long time before, which is to find a way to bring citizen journalism to radio reporting. So tell me how that came about and how you became a radio journalist in Griffith.
Well, I do attribute that to the NoFibs, primarily. You might remember, Margot, I think that the Labor Party were trialling a virtual town hall approach during the following election, the state election, I think it was, and you asked me to live tweet.
That's right.
From that forum. And I did that, and Spencer Housen, who was the morning producer on ABC Brisbane, had heard that and asked me to repeat that and then interviewed me on radio, and was quite encouraging. So I when they developed this citizen journalism program for ABC Brisbane, I put my hand up and got the gig for West End. So from 2014 to 2016, I was doing radio stories for ABC Brisbane, some of which I turned into written pieces for the West Ender. So I was, you know, continuing continuing to do things for NoFibs as well. And I think that gave me a new sort of focus on what citizen journalism was all about as well during that time.
It was interesting. You've written two pieces for NoFibs on that experience and the development of it. It seemed to start off quite raw. Did you edit your pieces and they just put them to air, or did you get any training on how to do audio?
They gave us a really wonderful training program. We were taught how to pitch stories, how to, once they were accepted, how to go out and, so we'd write a brief, I guess, go out and do the story. They taught us how to edit using Audacity, and we used our phones to record, and we'd write all the blurb for the announcer, and the intros, outros, as well as our own piece. And I think, you know, yes, they started to realise we probably needed a little bit more coaching than at times. Some of our early stories were fairly raw, but it was a wonderful experience, but resource intensive for the ABC. And I think that's why in the end they gave it up. But it really was a wonderful program with people from across Brisbane representing, in some cases, suburbs like mine. I was representing West End. Others were representing gay community or the African community, First Nations community. So it really was a wonderful mix and wonderful support from
so
the staff.
So did it only last 2 years? When did it fold?
No, it went on for another year. So it probably folded at the end of 2017, I think. Yeah. It taught me a lot that I could sort of, you know, rely on, I suppose, for what I ended up doing.
Yeah, I just love the pro-am mix, but I noticed in one of your pieces that there was worry in the ABC that they were replacing, they intended to replace paid journalists with volunteer, all that sort of thing. Do you know why it folded?
I think resources. Yeah. The people that were most supportive, the staff that were most supportive, both of them left the ABC to do other things. And so you really needed that sort of dedicated personal support.
Oh, God, yeah.
People that were supporting that program. So, there was a little bit of rumbling about I think criticism of citizen journalism generally is, you know, are people relying on unpaid people to do the job that, you know, paid journalists should be doing? And I guess the argument was that we were representing our communities, we were getting out and talking to locals in a way that journalists couldn't do.
Outside
in. Have the resources to do. So, that's right.
How did you end up becoming editor of the West Ender?
Well, that's a bit accidental, really. So the West Ender was started back in 1992. It's had an interesting history. It's sometimes been in print. It certainly started as a print journal, relying a lot on advertising, and was free to readers. But it's come and gone. And it got revived. It was revived around 2013 when Jeff Ebbs got involved, and became purely online after a while. They did again try to do a print run, but it became too expensive. And the advertising world has changed, or people needing advertising has changed a lot. So it became purely online. The original editor, Kerrod Trott, left Brisbane to go to South Australia and live in an eco-village. And I had just retired from full-time work and said to Kerrod, I'll take over, if you like. And it was just, you know, keeping it ticking over as I thought. But I got, you know, I don't do things by halves, really. So I started to engage people in the community to write for the West Ender. And I got a call from QUT to take some students, some journalism students. And I said to Kerrod, well, what am I going to call myself? We decided we better call me the editor.
So you had students interning.
Yes. So I had several students just for a semester at a time. And some of those continued to write for the West Ender until they got work. All of them have got work now. One of them's with the ABC at the moment, but they were just wonderful young people. And, you know, I told them that I wasn't a trained journalist, and actually I used some of your material
code of ethics, Margo, I hope,
on code of ethics, and also your advice to me and others about how to be a citizen journalist, really. And one of the things that, you know, always resonated with me was, you know, don't be afraid of putting yourself in the story. use I. You know, don't pretend that you're neutral necessarily. Let people
I thought
know
you were
where
pretty
you
neutral. I thought all your interviews were really, you know, that was one of the things I loved about all the citizen journalists. So they really wanted to listen to what all the candidates had to say and give them their say.
That's true. That's true. But I think, you encourage that sense of presence that you were there and also I think one of the things, I mean, we certainly when we were working with you, Margot, there were people helping us a little bit to begin with.
We had a good
sub-editor. Yeah. And that was important. But I thought it was a light touch, and that's one of the things I took up with the students. And I said, look, I'm not going to heavily edit anything you write. I want this to be yours. And I didn't want to have a house style.
I agree.
I didn't want to sort of present like that. And I didn't want to sort of, and I said, we're not competing with the Brisbane Times or the Courier Mail here. We can't. And we don't want to do the sort of stories they're doing. We want to do something that's about our community, that people in our community wouldn't be able to read elsewhere. And that's the perspective I wanted people to bring.
Well, you sort of basically became, I guess, used the No Fibs model to take it local. I mean, that was always my dream for Web Diary, that we'd set up in each state and, get more and more local and, like, to get great volunteers in, which, Web Diary particularly is just amazing.
Yeah.
What would you say? You're actually reporting on the ground where you live. So how did it change how you were seen in the community? There you are, a public servant, having lived there for 2 years and gradually emerging as the chronicler of where you live. How was that feeling, and how did it change your life?
Oh, enormously, actually. I think that West End is an incredibly embracing and generous community, I have to say. So they were always prepared to give me a go. And, I was worried. I didn't have the length of experience in the community that perhaps would have been helpful. But on the other hand, I didn't have the history of tensions and disagreements and other things within the community either. So I sort of would bounce up to people and ask a question that other people might have self-edited and not done. So I had that freedom. And people just want to read about their community. I think that's that people want to know what people are saying about their community. And, the most popular stories on the West End were written by a man, local, who used to have a local business, is retired now. He just wrote about individuals that were important in our community.
He profiled them.
And they would... Oh. He profiled them. And he's got a quirky style, and it was very much his style, and people love that. So they were amongst the most read stories, really. But of course, we've had other things in this community that have been highly significant around overdevelopment. So very political, very active community groups around development issues. We've had floods. We've had a lot of issues that bring community together. And I guess, the West Ender's role is to document and, in a sense, become, as you've mentioned, I think you've sort of mentioned the word before, sort of an archive of our, our community. Really.
So how did with you as editor, how did the West Ender cover that extraordinary moment for Griffith last election where Terry Butler lost to Max Chandler? How did you cover that? Did you have couple of citizen journos, or did people report?
I did a lot of that myself. One of the students, Ned, went off to the Greens party, the big party. and covered that, and I guess I was talking to the candidates. I certainly talked to Max and Terry Butler. But I did the odd Voxy. So, you know, just getting out and talking to people and recording, you know, what they saw as the issues. It was. I always do those. I've tried to do Voxy since the ABC experience. I've tried to add that to the mix, I guess.
So we republished your retirement essay, which I enjoyed very much, like so many contributors. Why did you decide to retire, and what do you intend to do now? Because I think journalism might be in your bones. I've just got that feeling.
Well, a lot of things are happening, Margot. I guess it was a fairly intense few years, and very intense around politics, and that's great, and it's energising, but it's also exhausting. And I just felt that I had given what I could at that point and needed to step away. Yes, I felt, Margot, after about 4 years of editing the West End, was more than that, I think, but it's quite exhausting in a fairly intense political, sort of locally politically intense environment. And I just needed a break and decided that it was time that I didn't do that anymore. I think I do have this idea that I'd like to keep doing something, but I'm not sure what it's going to be.
Well, I'll just tell you what I'd like you to do. I just think this Max Chandler, I would really like you to interview him. I don't know if you want to do it in writing or audio, but I mean, this is he's got the X factor, I reckon. He's very front foot. I remember someone said, "Oh God, he's like Albo what was when he was a youngster," you know. And just to give people a sense of what it took to win Griffith and how they're working to keep it, and also how are Labor and the Liberals going to approach this next election. I just think it's a very tricky thing for both parties. You know, it's not unheard of for them to preference each other when the chips are down. I don't think they would do it under Dutton. But I just think it's, you know, for me as a Queenslander, where the Greens struggled for so many years just to get one Green senator, Larissa, and all of a sudden the centre of power for the Greens in Australia is Brisbane. Three seats. Yep. I mean, you could, you know, go a bit further, but I just think, you know, I was completely focused on the independents, and at the same time the Greens undercover were doing a very similar thing, and from the left rather than the centre. And I just find it fascinating that my hometown is it's just unbelievable. As someone who grew up under Sir Joe, to have three Greens and two Green senators.
Yes.
If you're interested in that area, I would love to publish your thoughts.
Yeah. It's the council, going back to the council election, the outcome of that is quite amazing. While the Greens, they've picked up an extra seat or an extra ward, so they overwhelmingly won the Gabba, which is where I am, so West End is covered by the Gabba. But they've won another seat, Paddington, so another inner city seat. They didn't do as well as they would like to have in others, but there's optional preferential voting here, makes it very difficult. But what emerged was that the Greens are the LNP's real rivals here, and Labor only possibly got one extra ward. They had five. They may end up with six. So it was a disaster for Labor. And I think that it doesn't bode well for the state election in October. And the Greens are really going to build on their local vote in the state election in the inner city. And they've got federal members across the inner city now, those state seats, and they can really make a difference. I think if they do well in the state election, that they'll be able to do well as well in the federal election. So, it's all sort of building in their favour, I think. But it is still a slow thing, you know. I think a lot of us thought they would have done better in the council election. They wanted to have three seats at least. But they've got an extra, so that's interesting. And it'll be, Labor's just not – it's tone deaf at the moment.
Well, it does look as though Labor's heading for defeat later this year at the state election after a long reign. So, look, whatever you want to write on state politics, local politics, national politics, from what has become a very interesting area of Brisbane, I'd love to publish.
Someone I'd be interested in interviewing that probably hasn't got a profile for the Greens is Barb Pocock, who's the new senator from South Australia. I think she's quite impressive. She's got a very interesting background in, industrial relations. And, I think that she's sort of brought a different sort of gravitas, I think, to the Greens around those issues.
Well, it's been interesting how she and Deb O'Neill have worked hand in glove to dig out the horrors of Price Waterhouse. I agree with her. She's been pretty impressive.
And I think it's interesting as well how we're seeing Sarah Hanson-Young, work with Labor on the water bill as well. So, we're starting to see, this is always this mantra that the Greens are extreme and they won't sit down and negotiate, but in actual fact, they're getting a lot of stuff done through the Senate, and by working with ministers like Tanya Plibersek. So it's interesting times, I think.
All right. Well, look. Thanks a million for chatting with me, and I'm just so thrilled about what you've done and what you've shown can be done, and hopefully. We can continue to read and or hear your reports from a seat that used to be owned by the Labor Prime Minister and is now owned by a young Anthony Albanese.
Exactly. Thanks, Margot. Thanks for all you've done. This has been – you started this journey for me.
So I'm very proud of you.
Thank you.